Good morning, Wisconsin. Morning, world. It's a new day, and thank you for kicking it off with us right here at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Got your host, James J. here. I am joined by Terry Johns.
Good morning.
And we are joined right now to kick off the hour by Mystique McIntyre. She is the director and one of the actors in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the edgy director showcase premiering tonight at Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. Good morning, Mystique.
Good morning.
Good to see you again. How you been?
I am well, thank
you. It's been so long since you've had to put up with
me.
It's been
right? A week? Has it been a week?
It's really good to see you. It's good to have you in studio here.
Thank you.
Appreciate the time. I wanted to dive into a couple of things about this show. Now, for those that did not hear the most recent episode of Director's Cut, which, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you? We had you and Moselle on.
Yes.
And thank you again for joining us. Really appreciated the time.
It was fun.
We had a fun time, too, and really enjoyed everything about this. Like a lot of people out here, very familiar with the movie, with the script, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. It's an American classic. It's a flawless script, if you ask me. And I love these timeless scripts. I think that they can give new audiences, younger audiences, a lot to learn from, a lot to grow from. What I really, really appreciate is the chances and the risks that young directors, that directors in general are taking with so many of these. And we've seen this with casting among the whole gamut, from TV to movies to plays and all this. I think some great examples are out there. And I really think that you look at a play like Hamilton that really set this, like, it was already happening. And Hamilton kind of set it on fire. Like, it just like, oh, now
yes.
Everything's free game. And so with that, let's talk about what the play is about, and then let's kind of describe some of the changes that you guys have made.
Okay. The play at its heart is actually a love story.
Mm-hmm.
It's between George and Martha. He is a college professor, and she is the daughter of the president of that college. They've been together for 23 years, and they like to argue. That's their pastime.
Mm-hmm.
The show starts. It's 2 a.m. They're coming home from a party at the university, and he finds out that she's invited over a young couple, a new professor there and his wife, for drinks afterward, and the evening devolves from there. A lot of labels get peeled.
Mm-hmm.
They get down to the bone of a lot of things, and it's really a fascinating script, a fascinating show, and it really, well, I think I described it to you before, James, it's a punch in the gut.
yeah, it's a great description. It really is.
So.
When it comes to some differences as far as casting, how did that go?
Sure. Well, obviously, I am not a man, but I am playing George.
Yes.
He's a middle-aged person. It's only the four people, and instead of... I always feel like as an actor, you should be able to stretch yourself and take on different roles, do different things, if you feel comfortable with that. And when I realized that I always wanted to play Martha. I loved this script for years. And then one time I saw a production and I went, oh, no, I want to be George.
Nice.
But who's going to, first of all, perform this and then cast me as George? Nobody. So I had to do it myself.
Right, so on.
I got Moselle to come on board with Martha. You know, we've acted together before. She's a wonderful actress. She really is. And then I needed people for my younger couple. So I cast my son Logan as Nick. Logan is transgender. And Logan's friend Ren Enders, who's done theater up in Stevens Point, is non-binary. And so we have an interesting mix of people coming together here to perform these roles. But again, as an actor, when you take it on, you become that person. So I play George as a man. I wear the suit and the tie and, you know, how you stand and how you sit and how you act. I'm trying to be George. You know, I'm not me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the beautiful things about being on stage is you get to be somebody else.
Yeah. When it comes to, because I love this. I love it so much. In part, because, yes, I think this is what happens, for one, when you do what you do, and I say this to the entertainment industry, when you treat women the way you do for so many years, for so many decades, hey, you're 29, do you want to play the grandma? Like, that's it. Because
yes.
Otherwise, I don't want to see you until you're 60. Like, that's what we did to Helen Mirren, what we did to all these great, classic, wonderful, amazing
actors.
What do you
play when you're 60?
Like, the grandma. Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
The great grandma.
So... So what do you think? If you have ever been around a woman in your life, I would think that you would understand what's going to happen here. Women are going to get some things done. They're going to, okay, you're not going to cast us. We're going to find roles for ourselves. Or maybe we'll take your roles. Mm-hmm. And it's fair. It's legit. And it makes these plays that... I love this script, but I've seen Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. I've seen it two or three times, and I've seen it done very well. I've seen the movie. Incredible movie.
Yes.
I want to see a little different. I want to see something different out there. I want to see something that brings maybe a different... This great legendary script brings something different out of it. This is one of the things that happens with that. It's also... It's a throwback. This is the way Shakespeare did it. They wouldn't allow women on stage and stuff. You go back to vaudeville, and you didn't have as many people as you needed most times. So you had to have people cast in different, playing different roles than the sex that they were and that kind of thing. I mentioned Hamilton before. There's so many great examples of this, and I can't wait for more of them as we go forward. I want to ask real quickly about the part of it where you're working with family. Moselle's amazing, great actor, and I couldn't agree with you more about working with her, and I've enjoyed every time I've been on stage with her. When it comes to working with family, that's a mixed bag. It's wonderful, and it sounds great on paper. How has it gone?
Oh, it's been wonderful.
Good, good.
I've worked with Logan before. We did Constellations last year in the studio.
Shout out about that, too. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Constellations was great. Great work on that by everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. So I've worked with him before, but this is the first time we've acted together. Mm-hmm. But he's such a professional about it and has always been. I mean, he's done way more shows than I have. Despite being 30 years younger than me. Anyway, but...
That stuff gets in the way?
No, none of that. No, it's been really great. And both of my boys are involved. My oldest son is our stage manager. And my middle son is doing tech for us, lights and sound. So I've worked with both of them on things before. We just all pull together as a team. You know, we're good friends. You know, I'm good friends with my kids. So I'm fortunate.
So coming into today, I mean, showtime, right?
Yes.
What's been the biggest challenge?
Learning my lines. George doesn't shut up.
Yeah.
He just talks and talks and talks. When I originally planned this, I wanted to do it as a staged reading because I knew I was going to be directing as well, and I knew it would be challenging to try and memorize it. I get all the cast in place, and they're like, we got to learn these lines. We got to memorize this. Mm. We can't hold our books. And I'm like,
You're like, wait, my vision is.
Yeah. So we all committed to it, and then we all had our moments where we were in tears going, I'm never going to do that. But we did. We've all come together. We had a great dress rehearsal last night.
Yeah.
Great preview night.
Good
to hear. You know, so I think we're all feeling really good about today and tomorrow. So
right on.
Excited about it, you know, being able to do this and share it.
So. Yeah. Even with a short amount of time to rehearse and limited time availability schedule-wise, I'm sure, you still get that. At this point in the day, in the stretch of the run, you're so ready to hit that stage. You're just dying to hit that stage. The nerves, all those things are great, but you're ready for an audience.
Yes.
So somebody wants to come check it out. What are the details?
Tonight. James, do you want to share the...
Sure. You can go to wrctheater.org. That's one of the ways you can do it. You can click on the buy tickets now. It'll pop you up. And one of the cool things that WRCT does is you can even, if the seats that are available, you can kind of pick your seats sometimes.
Oh, nice.
With this one, with the Edgy Directors Showcase, there's a limited amount of seats. So we want to encourage you to get them early because they're going quick. There's already, you guys have already had a nice set for today and tomorrow talking to Tim, but there are seats available, so we want to encourage you to do that. Get those tickets. They're just $10. And when's the last time you got to say, hey, for $10, we're going to go out and we're going to see a really, really good show? You go to the movies, you're going to spend three times that, and you can't even guarantee you're going to see something you like. Here's something we can almost guarantee you will, and at the same time, you are buying and supporting local. When we talk about those things, it is not just the mom and pop small business out there. It is our nonprofits. It is our art industry, all of the above.
What time is the show?
7:00 tonight. You can also stop in at the theater and get tickets before the show.
Okay.
Assuming that there still are seats available.
Sure.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Real quick, you have some legends in the movie. Elizabeth Taylor, Richard Burton, I think George Segal's in it. What was it like for you, for the cast, to play those roles of actors like that? Was there any kind of like, was there any hesitancy? Did you watch any of the old stuff? Anything like that?
I think we've all seen the movie. I mean, I have multiple times because I've enjoyed it. I think for all of it, well, at least for me, and Moselle has said as well, you can't mimic that. You know, you can't try and do what they did. You know, we just can't. So you really have to find your own way with it. But I think you do that pretty much in any show, you know, but especially something iconic. You really have to find your own voice, your own person in there.
What was it like, and how well do you feel you did a good job of getting down the mannerisms and the body movement, just the body language of playing a man? Mm-hmm. How did that go, and what did you do to train for that?
Being very conscious of it, and then having people point out things. Moselle would say, don't bump your hip out like that. Men don't stand like that. I'm like, oh, yep, okay, you're right. I would actually watch people. You know, you know, when I'm at the grocery store or whatever, I'd be standing there looking at the guy over the next thing like, oh, okay, that's how he stays, you know. Paying attention, but then being very conscious of that when I'm on stage, how you sit, and you don't cross your legs this way. You don't lean. Really thinking in terms of all those things. But once you do that, it really helps you feel more like the character.
Yeah. So. It's a nice mixed bag of it takes the work, but it's one of those things that helps that little bit more if you believe in the character, and the more you believe it, the more the audience will and all that.
Right.
Who is Afraid of Virginia Woolf? The Edgy Directors Showcase, premiering tonight at 7 o'clock at the WRCT Centralia Studio Theater stage. You walk into the Centralia Center, right to your left, it'll be right there. You can get your tickets, as Mystique said, today and tomorrow at the show. But if you want to make darn sure you got those tickets, go to WRCtheater.org and get them right now. WRCtheater.org. Please tell the rest of the cast, break a leg. You guys have a great run. You're going to kill it. You're going to do awesome out there. Enjoy yourselves.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We'll be sending people your way. We're going to make sure that you get a full house.
That would be wonderful.
Thanks for the time, Mystique.
Thank you.
We'll take a break right here. We'll come back and have some more fun on the show here at Mornings on WFHR, locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody, to the morning show here at WFHR. We are locally grown radio. Terry and James here with you. Again, a big shout out to Mystique for joining us. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, looking forward to that.
It's going to be a great show. Again, WRCtheater.org. Get your tickets. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Let's give them a good crowd, everybody. Taking a look at this one, Terry, I thought this was kind of an interesting question. And again, we'll open this up to the audience, 424-2600, if you want to call up and join us. Because I just think it's fun to get other reactions from this one. Whenever people ask what superpower you'd want, everyone thinks about invisibility or flying or teleporting, super strength, all of these. Or being able to eat all the cookies and not gain any weight. Some people like that one, too.
That's you.
But what about, that is my superpower, yes. But what about and the fact that I never sleep? Like, those are my two superpowers. Like,
I don't know if that's a superpower.
No, it's not.
Sleep.
I'll tell you, it's not. It's not. What about the power to turn your five senses on and off? A recent poll asked, if you could gain the power to switch on and off one of your senses at will, which would it be?
Well, we already know yours by gender. It's your hearing.
Yeah. Matt? What'd you say? But, so 40% of people said smell, 30% said hearing, 17% said taste, 10% said touch, and only 1% said sight. That's incredible to me. That's really interesting. Just because, not that so few people chose sight, but just 1%. We talk, I mentioned many times, well, it's hard to get 90% of anything, no matter what you're voting on. It's really hard to get 1% of something, too.
But honestly, when you first even just gave the heading of this, right away, because I was thinking, I'm like, okay, which one? For me, I put sight to the bottom right away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that would be my last. So yeah. I was kind of surprised there was 1%.
Yeah, right. I would think that would almost be zero. And I think that's mostly just, I think that may even be just math. Like, why the 1% there?
I mean, smell depends upon who you're around.
Yeah. That's the truth.
Taste might be the same, where you have to go for dinner, you know.
I like that. And hearing is that you had a great line there. That was hilarious. That's very, very. I think we don't have to ask guys this one. No.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have the greatest smelling, so I would say that while smell is probably the one that I would pick, I'd miss it Like, because when I do smell things, boy, especially once I quit smoking, like that came back in a huge force, like over the next couple of years after I first stopped. And man, I did not realize how many smells I was missing out on, for good and bad, but mostly sure. Good. That's a tougher one. Another thing I see in this, Terry, no pun intended there. I didn't mean to put it that way. How much better we could be in society being empathetic to people that are dealing with loss of one of these.
Yeah, absolutely. I know someone, that's what I was going to say. I know someone who, and I believe it was as a result of like influenza. This was several years ago, but she lost her taste, you know, and they said, you know, the doctor said it will come back, but it's going to be, but then it was just weird. She's like, you know, nothing tastes good, nothing tastes bad, but there's like no taste. And so then it turned into this whole texture thing. And she's like, I've never really had a texture issue before. Wow. But now when I can't taste anything, you know, then you're more consciously aware about what the makeup is of what's going to do. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's kind of interesting how it starts this other trajectory of probably just thoughts, right? Like But how your head plays into it.
There are there's just a basic need, no matter who you are, no matter what personality you have or anything like that, every human being needs touch. Every human being needs that touch, whether it is a handshake, a fist bump, a hug, no matter what it is, from when you were literally first born to the last day you're on this planet. You need the human touch, and that's so huge. To be able to see things is such a part of humanity. We incorporate it in so much of life. And the idea of having these things taken away is not only like scary, but it's also something that I don't think a lot of people can really even come close to understanding. I back in the day, I auditioned for a role, and it was for a blind person. And I wanted the part really bad. It was a really good role. And growing up, I always thought the role of Helen Keller would like be a dream role for an actress. Like, if I was an actress, I'd kill to play that role. Like, that just to me, not only what she did in her life and everything, but to have to learn to, you know, empathetically and to, as a good actor, if you're getting good at what you do, to really be that person. When I'm doing this and I'm trying to be blind, I'm discovering a whole bunch of things about myself and about our world that I didn't know until I did that. And then it comes down to me and two other actors. Well, the other two actors were blind. And I'm like, I can't do this. Like, I told them, like, I can't, like, I need the work. Trust me, I need this job.
But, like,
I
feel like an imposter.
Yes.
Yeah.
I can't do that no matter how good of an actor I am, and I'm damn good. I can't do what those two actors can do.
So I have a technical question for you.
Yeah.
And I'm really not being a smart aleck. Like, for real. So if as you're preparing for an audition like this, like, are you... This probably sounds bad, but like, are you just putting on dark glasses and pretending to be blind, or are you legitimately trying to do it without, you know what I mean? Like, are you putting on something, an eye mask, so you literally can't see, or are you just pretending you can't see?
I spent an hour or two trying to just have my eyes closed. And just trying to do that. Then I tried really, really, really dark sunglasses with like I put cardboard paper on.
So like you were impairing the vision,
And none of those things were working. So finally, I did try a bandana, just wrapping a bandana
just curious,
around,
you know.
And but it's a great question. And everything I did, I felt like I was blind because I couldn't see, but I still wasn't really. Because for a blind person, the other senses kick up higher.
Sure.
And so many other little things. That, like, if you are born blind, it's different than opposed to if you became blind at a different age or something.
Well, and the reality is you still had the ability to peek.
Yes,
right? I mean,
absolutely.
That was still there, right? At the end of the day, you could still, if you had to, needed to, you could.
I'm a crazy person. When I'm playing these roles,
really?
that's who I am. If you say James, chances are I'm not going to respond. That's how crazy I am.
Sure.
And even with all that, in the back of my mind, that was playing there. I've got that security there that I can still open my eyes. And having that security just, to me, made it impossible for me to do justice to that role, especially compared to a blind person. It's one of these interesting things that we're going to more and more in society when it comes to acting and playing roles. You know, how do I feel about a non-Jewish person playing a Jewish person? Like, maybe they got curly hair and they look very Jewish, but they're not. Like, I've dealt with that my whole life. I've seen many, many more. I've actually seen more times than not a non-Jewish person playing a Jew than I've actually seen Jews playing. I love how they say the Jews run Hollywood, and yet this is all I ever see. How many Jews were in Passions of the Christ, by the way? Let me see. Zero. So this is what I've grown up seeing. It's frustrating to me. At the same time, I get it. I understand that sometimes there's going to be an actor who's Italian playing a Jew. I understand these things. I think there's a line. I think there's a line in the sand when it comes to, like, disabilities especially, and when it comes to certain creeds, when it comes to certain, like, sexuality and that kind of thing. At the same time, I think that, you know, Mystique playing a man, I think that's cool.
I was going to say, like, but then there also has to be the available pool of, right, because when we're talking about acting, auditioning, selecting someone for the yes. role. So had you been auditioning for that blind role and it was three of you who had sight, your thought would have been different about
absolutely.
It, right? So like 100%. if those other two hadn't been blind, you probably would have been like, hey, I'm going for this.
Oh,
like,
yes,
this is,
yes,
you know what I, you yes. know. So I think it also depends upon who presents for the opportunity.
Community theaters run into this a lot. Hey, I want to do, you know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That's a classic play. It's so darn good. You got great roles all over here. But we have no Native Americans in our area. So who am I going to have playing, you know? And so it's a lot of those kind of things. I think that, audiences and community in local theaters, and really theater in general, have to work with and work and know your audience. Really,
sure.
You got to know your audience. You got to know your crowd and know what you have to work with. As much as you want to do certain scripts, I don't think you can do certain scripts. Like, I don't think in that scenario, if you don't have a Native American that can play that role, I'm sorry, you shouldn't do that script.
And so if you have no 30-year-old women, you can't have grandmas.
Yes, yes. Apparently, yeah, apparently, yeah. Oh, well, you with the callbacks today. Yeah, I guess I would say smell like most people on this one.
I think, I think so too, probably. Like, I don't know. I could, and if it wasn't permanent, if it's short term, I could go back and forth between probably smell and taste, honestly.
Yeah,
But those would be my higher ones.
Me too. Yeah, they're my one and two easily. But it does make me, interestingly, I didn't go into it thinking of this or planning it, but it does make me appreciate my five senses a lot more.
For sure.
Just going through this conversation and everything. We'll take a break. We'll get to Melissa's news. We'll come back with some more fun. Got some Danny Wright stuff to get to in just a little bit on the morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio.
Really?
Morning show here at WFHR. Locally grown radio. How many? Because I didn't do a lot of the school dances thing, but like, you know, your little side parties you have in high school and everything. How many of dances having this play? That awkward. You're never like really close to each other when you're in that grade and you're dancing. You're really got the little foot like in between you or whatever.
Only at school.
If you were actually like brave enough to talk to the person, like ask for a dance or something like that. That song. That I don't care if it's 100 years from now. That song will still do that to people.
But do you remember like the older kids kind of like terrorizing you? Like they'd say that, oh, at the dance they're gonna come around with a ruler.
Yep.
They never had a ruler.
No, they did. If they were even paying attention to us half the time, yes, yeah. So I thought that was a fun one. The conversation that we were in earlier about senses and everything. I did want to mention that in Morning Magazine today, in part one, Linda Brost is going to join us. She's the administrative specialist over at the ADRC. Very looking forward to talking with her. We're going to talk a little bit about aging and disability resources, and really make sure that we touch on the disability part too.
Awesome.
So we're looking forward to that, and that just works out that we have that interview set up right away today at our last episode of Morning Magazine for the week. Linda Brost will join us in part one from the ADRC. And in part two, I believe you are familiar with this gentleman, Craig Broren, going to be joining us.
Absolutely.
Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools superintendent. And of course, also for this season.
He's our campaign chair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did a great job.
Craig is bringing in Jennifer Wilhorn, 4K administrator. We're looking forward to talking with both of them. Any chance to talk about our kids, about our public schools, always take that.
Yeah. And Jen does great work. So that'll be an awesome interview.
Looking forward to it. So just wanted to mention that really quick. And Terry, you mentioned that you had heard from a listener out there about the roads being a little bit rough. So I want to make sure that everybody stays safe out there.
Yeah, take your time. Slow down a little bit. Starting to get a little slick.
I mentioned this earlier to you. The ideal kid's birthday party is where we're going next here.
I feel like this is going to be obnoxious for some reason.
Yeah. Kids' birthday parties used to be easy. Give them a new video game or some clothes. Pin the tail on the donkey or something like that, and boom, you know.
Yeah.
Order a pizza. Everybody's good.
Did you have, like, we call them kid parties? Like, did you have kid birthday parties when you were a kid, where friends would come over?
I mentioned many times I did not have a lot of things growing up. Didn't get a lot of gifts for Christmas. Those kind of things. And how I feel about my birthday. It is not because of my parents. My parents tried really hard to give me good birthdays. Didn't have a lot, but yes, I had parties just like that. I remember my top 2-3 favorite birthday of all time when I first moved out here. I invited some kids over from school. It was like sixth grade, and there was a huge snowstorm. And my parents were like, we don't know what to do with these kids. So my dad comes up with the idea of, like, what about a scavenger hunt? So me and, like, 6-7 little kids are bopping around our neighborhood going to these houses during this snowstorm, asking for salt and these kind of, like,
oh, funny,
really
cute
things. It was so much fun.
And the neighbors are like, who are these new people?
Yeah. We had a blast. It was awesome. Like, and it was very simple. It couldn't have cost them more than $5 to put that together or whatever. And we had a blast. Now, I don't know what I'm so lucky my kids are in their 20s and all this. Like, I have not had to worry about what the birthday parties can be like now for some. Now things are a lot more dramatic thanks to social media and Pinterest. And a recent survey of parents with children between the ages of 3 and 12, the average kid's birthday party involves 16 guests, 9 presents, and 3 hours of celebration.
On average.
Yeah. 2 in 3 parents say their kids expect their favorite food, and a similar number put together custom goodie bags for their child's parties.
You know, I think...
What are they, celebrities? What are they going to the Academy Awards or
something? In elementary school, though, I mean, I don't know. Like when my kids... So when my kids had friend parties, right? So we've always done family birthday parties up until 18. But for their friend parties, we would do that. Like, I might get helium balloons for, you know, to kind of decorate with. And then, you know, the box that, like, the movie theater candy, like the box of candy, you know, so at dollar store, the balloon was $1, the candy was $1. And I'd use that as the weight. And then when the kids left, they all took one with them, you know, something like that. Or little treat bags or something.
I think
like that
stuff's really cool. Yeah. Until you're 14. Like, after the age of 15, then it's different to me.
Oh, yeah.
That's
different. I agree. I think it's more elementary. You know what I mean? I think it's more younger kids.
And no problem with that. Like, have all the fun you can. I mean, enjoy it.
So, like, 15, you're giving them, like, AirPods and, you know, whatever on the way out.
Here's some socks. Here's some socks. Here's a job application. Good luck.
I'm joking.
Are
they your socks? Are they you socks? Or are they new socks?
There's a hole in there. I'm going to want to knit that.
You're going to want to darn that up.
Yeah, you're going to get some duct tape on that hole in that sock there. about half say...
Oh, your poor children.
About half say that their kids expect clouds or costume characters, inflatable play sets, or laser tag. And most parents say a party theme is necessary. This is the one that I'm more used to hearing about with my nephews, is having the theme.
Well, like when they're
party.
Little, you know, and it's usually revolves around a show, right? Like the, you know, Paw Patrol or Dora or, you know, whatever it is.
I may never get to play one of my dream roles, playing the Joker. I may never get to do that, but I did technically kind of get to do it once.
You told
me
this.
I did get to play the Joker once for my... Mason, my nephew, his birthday party.
Yeah,
it all superheroes. It was a superhero themed birthday party, and Mason calls me and says, "Uncle James, I need you to be the Joker." I was the only person that was a villain, and it meant so much to me. I could get cast by some big production company, and it feel good. Not as good as that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That'll always be the top of, like, one of the greatest castings I've ever had in my life, ever will have, just from that simple phone call. I'm not going to deprive a little kid of that, especially a nephew or something. At a certain age, though, because I think what I'm thinking of, and I think some people might be, and I don't even know if it's a show anymore, and I never watched it. I just saw, you know, the commercials and stuff of that Sweet 16 stuff.
And I never watched that either.
The monster that could be, or whatever.
But I think I think they can easily get out of hand.
Yeah.
No question. Yeah. And then at what age do they kind of stop? You know what I mean? Like our younger daughter, her and her friends still get together, but it's not really like a birthday party. You know what I mean? Like, they might do a sleepover or something like that. Although when they were little, her birthday was so much easier for me with friends because we have a swimming pool, and she has a June birthday. So it was like she did a pool party.
Yeah.
Grace's birthday is in January, and so that it was always like, okay, what do we do with these? You know what I mean? Like, what are we going to do? Yeah. But you know, there's different options. You might go roller skating, or you might do, you know, whatever, a sledding or tubing party or something like that.
If my kid is 55 and they want to celebrate their birthday with me, I'm all in. I love that. It's more about, to me, the amount of, like, how much, like, what you do or to add to it or whatever, or that kind of thing.
The hype.
Yeah, a lot of that. I don't think that there's ever an age where we shouldn't be celebrating birthdays and making, you know, making the most of them and everything. As my papa would tell you, it's better than the alternative.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that that's always something to celebrate. I worry a little bit about the generation or the group of kids out there. And I think this is an outlier. I don't think that the majority of kids are that diva 16 kind of thing. But I do wonder about a society of kids growing up with that and TV shows about that and that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
It makes you worry a little bit.
And you think about what some people spend on some of these parties.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, don't miss your mortgage payment because you were putting on a birthday party, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, be reasonable. And there's a lot of fun things. Like you said, the scavenger hunt thing, that cost your parents nothing. Now, I don't know, honestly, I don't know that I would send my kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Or a group of kids, like, door to door.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe where we, if you know all of your neighbors, or if you can tip them off, right? And say, okay, kids are going to stop by and ask you for this. Or maybe you drop off what they're going to ask for.
you
know what I mean?
But
I think that there's a lot of really fun, creative things that people can do. And it makes it fun for the kids, and they get the opportunity to spend that time together. But there is something to be said about those old silly games too. You know, the old pin the tail on the donkey, or the cotton balls with the spoon, or when you're blindfolded.
The cup game. You got to throw the ball in the cup, like things like that. Oh, yeah. They're classics. 78% of parents say that they put pressures on themselves to make it amazing. But even with all the effort, 73% say that their kids are not so easy to impress. it is not easy. You know, when we were kids, you didn't have not only social media. I'm not even just talking about that, but just everything is so much more bigger and more electronic in so many of these things that when a kid at a young age is looking at a tablet and they've got that's their entertainment source.
And we got the old paddle ball.
Yeah, like there's no competition. You can't compete with that. Like, it's tough. I think that the part that bothers me, I think, about this, though, not outside of the whole Sweet 16 thing and all that, is the idea that parents are beating themselves up on these things. How many of your birthdays do you remember? How many? You know, I mean, chances are if it doesn't go as smoothly as you'd like it to, which, you know, more than likely it's going to happen, no matter with all the planning and all the heart that you have put into this, your kid's still a year older. They're okay. They're going to be fine. This is, you know, I can't imagine many scenarios where they're going to be in therapy because of a bad birthday party or something. You know, don't beat yourself up over these things. We do this way too much as parents. There's two things we got to get better about as a society. The way we think of ourselves and how badly we beat ourselves up internally, and the way we treat groups of people. My mom, from a young age, used to tell me all the time, used to tell my sister all the time, Jillian, don't be growing up being a woman hater. You know, support women. Like, obviously, you're not going to get along with every woman you meet, but be somebody who supports women. Parents supporting parents. Mm-hmm. Much more of that. Instead of the whole judgment thing and telling others, well, I do it this way, or when I was a parent, or I don't care. If they ask for advice, it's one thing. Otherwise, not many people need your advice if they're not asking for it.
And I'm a firm believer in making a big deal out of birthdays. But it doesn't have to be a break the bank thing, right?
Yeah.
It's about relationships, and it's about, you know, bake the cake.
Yes.
Buy the cake, whatever you got to do. But you know what I mean? Like, I think there's so many ways that you can make it special and memorable and a big deal that don't involve spending hundreds of dollars.
Every kid's got a favorite, especially I really like the thing on there about making their favorite meal.
Let them pick their favorite meal. Yeah.
Yes,
and let them pick the cake flavor and you're golden.
Yeah. You're done right there.
But always buy the relight candles. I'm just saying. I love those things.
They're great. They are great. My it is one of the oldest things we do to my father, but every time it gets him.
I do too. I always do it. I love him.
It's a great one. Take a break. I'm so glad you mentioned that. We'll take a break. We'll come back and have some more fun on The Morning Show here at WFHR. Welcome back to The Morning Show here on WFHR, locally grown radio. Terry and James here with you. Take you right to the top of the hour. Last segment of the week. But we got a lot of great guests coming in next week. Got a lot of fun lined up for you next week, of course. All the hits for you. Pet of the Week, Star of the Day, Misty's Mini Birthday and Anniversary Club every day, and so much more, you guys. It's going to be a lot of fun weeks coming up here. So we got to get into one of our That Ain't Right stories of the day, and oftentimes this involves an individual or an act or something like that. I thought it'd be fun to have this for once. The dirtiest cities in America. That's where our That Ain't Right, that's our That Ain't Right story. Yeah, dirty. Nobody wants that. A lot of people are kicking the tires on possible destinations for summer vacations right now. And if filth isn't on your list of must-haves, you might want to consider this. There's a new list of the dirtiest cities in America, which takes into account things like pollution, living conditions, and rodents, infrastructure, including landfills, and consumer satisfaction with greenery and parks. They considered 152 cities, and the one that ranked the dirtiest is Houston.
Huh. Interesting. I've never been. Have you?
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that I was there for very long. But when I was there, because I come from skyscrapers. I mean, I'm used to growing up seeing skyscrapers, all that. What was weird to me about Houston is how flat everything seemed except for the buildings. And how, to be honest, and I liked my time in Houston. I liked my time in Texas. I would easily go back to Texas, especially like Galveston or Austin or something like that. But it was dirty. It did. Pollution-wise, it was the worst I've seen. And I've spent a lot of time in, like, Los Angeles and Chicago and a lot of those things. And neither of those two are very good either. I'm not saying that they're great. But I hadn't, you know. But I liked Houston. I did enjoy my time there.
I have a story, but I have to have you go through your list first. Or maybe this city will pop up.
Newark was second, followed by San Bernardino, California, Detroit, New Jersey City, New Jersey, Bakersfield, California, San Antonio, Texas, Fresno, California, Oklahoma City, and Yonkers, New York. On the flip side, the least dirtiest city is Virginia Beach, Virginia, Des Moines, Iowa, Buffalo, Charlotte, North Carolina, Lexington, Kentucky, and Columbus, Ohio.
Huh.
What did you going to add?
Well, no. So one time Randy was at a school, at a training down at Northwestern. And I went down on the weekend, you know, and we were just going to go to, there was a restaurant that he was like, oh, I want to try this place. So we were walking there. It was maybe like four blocks from the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're walking and it's nighttime. And I look kind of down the alleyway and I'm like, what is that? And he's like, he looks at me like I have a third eye. You know, he's like, they're rats. Like, there's like rats like in the alleyway. And I'm like, that just,
That it even growing up around that stuff, you don't really get used to a lot of that.
Like, I just, it was so cringy to me. Like, I was just like, oh my God, yuck.
Milwaukee is ranked 68th on this list. So pretty good.
So that's good. Yeah, out of how many? 150?
150.
Okay.
So not bad at all. I want to see. Usually Madison shows up. Aurora, Illinois, 77 on here. Interesting. Let's see. Chicago, 96th. So very impressive, actually.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting to me. But I will say, too, the city has worked very, very hard, just as hard as they have worked to bring down the violence and, you know, some of those things. Cleaning up the city has been a big priority, too. And like a lot of things that you see in the media, it's not nearly as bad as what you see. Unfortunately, especially if you watch WGN. which is sad to me because I love WGN, but I really, some of the reporting that they do nowadays, and so it's so low hanging fruit. It's so
lazy.
Yeah. Naperville, Illinois, some of my old stomping grounds came in at 110. Not bad there. And let's see here. I mean, because I know that Madison, there we go. Madison, 124.
Oh.
Right after Honolulu, Hawaii. So, very good, actually. I think that's a pretty good one. Grand Rapids, Michigan at 128. Minneapolis at 131 and St. Paul at 133. So, pretty good. But that's not fair. It's too cold out. Nobody goes outside. How can you even have any... I'm joking. I'm just kidding. All the Minnesotans out there.
So, see, it depends upon the time of the year that the poll gets done.
Ah, yeah, there you go. That would be an interesting list. I didn't see Madison on this list. Interesting. Maybe it was, and I just scooted past it or something. But you can see the entire list at... lawnstarter.com. I don't know if it necessarily is going to change anybody's direction of where you were going to go for spring break or something like that, but I think it's an interesting thing to consider when traveling. I don't think I've ever really thought about that before.
I don't know if I have either.
I think in part too, because especially if you don't get to travel much and, oh, I've always wanted to go to this place. If I tell you, well, they ranked like 30th in dirtiness, chances are it like, oh, that sucks. But you're still going. You know, I don't know right. if it's really going to hold
unless
you
they
back.
Rank like first. Right.
That's an eye catcher. I admit that is an eye catcher right there. I don't know how quickly I was ever going to go to like Houston or Newark right off the top of my head. But I. That stuff does stand out to me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I was saying earlier, if you go to Texas, a lot of times Dallas, Houston, that's where your airport, you know, oftentimes are going to be dropped off. I love spending time in Dallas, and I really liked the Houston area. I enjoyed my time there. So this, while it stands out, it's not going to keep me from going to Houston. I wouldn't say that, but I'm a city kid. I think for different people, different things. I'm used to city life. I'm sure. used to seeing a lot of those things. It's not going to, if anything, I would be more surprised if I didn't see some of those things.
Yeah, and I kind of have the opposite. Like, I kind of mm-hmm. have the shock with it, you know, yeah. still. Like, I'm just like, whoa, why would that be like that? Yeah.
I get that. I completely get it. Going to some good stories of the day. A man from Ireland lost a friend to suicide a few years ago, so he is raising awareness for suicide prevention by hitchhiking from Ireland to Australia with no money. He says the point was to pick something that was so out there that people might not believe it's possible. He says, quote, "I'm relying on human kindness to show even when odds are against you, you can find a way." He's also raising money along the way and says that he expects the trip to take a year and a half. He started on January 14th. He's in Italy right now, and he has an Instagram page that you can follow along with. I'm
struggling with the logistics of that a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I
minimizing his idea and his cause. No. I mean, I get that, but and the whole yes, where there's a will, there's a way. But the whole hitchhiking thing
Australia's
too.
Australia's an island. I mean,
I'm like,
how are you getting there, guy? Like, I think that you know, when it comes to like a plane ticket and those things, that's the kind of thing that he is hoping to, you know, have some help with.
Or is he boat jumping?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. Interesting.
If you are curious, Andy Howard 213 is his Instagram post. Andy Howard 213.
Yeah, check it out. Keep us posted.
Yeah, I'm wishing him the best with that. And more power to you, especially when raising awareness to such an important cause. I with you, though, right away. Wait a minute. Huh? Yeah, how's he? Well, I guess
that was the point.
Yeah. Can you still remember people's birthdays without Facebook? Ooh, it's tough.
I can some,
but thank God for calendars. Yeah. I'll say that much. A 73-year-old man in Montana estimates he knows around 3,000 birthdays by heart.
Oh my goodness. No way.
And he can even refer to people in town by their birthdays rather than their names.
Okay, but do you think he knows their names? Because if I just associated everyone with their like if that became their name.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fair enough.
Yeah,
you probably know 3,000 people's names.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just think that's kind of cool though too.
It is cool.
I mean, just an interesting thing to kind of bring out. Looking at the entire article that you can find at krtv.com, shout out to Tom Wiley for the great reporting on this. Glasgow has a population of 3,202 people. And he knows 3,000 birthdays. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That is really cool. That is very cool.
So he's like, you know, he's probably, what age did you say he was? Like 70-something?
He is 73.
Okay. So, you know, he's probably that guy that's just hanging out at the gas station in the morning. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yes,
and just knows everyone.
I love that.
And then from there he goes to the grocery store.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
There's a video of a boy named Zach asking a girl named Taylor to the prom. She said yes. Both kids have special needs and are very excited to go. Yeah, it's hard for me to watch that video.
Those are awesome. I love that.
Yeah, it's so good. There's a handful of videos. It doesn't matter how many times I watch them. The soldier who's hiding and the little kid
comes out. Oh, like when they surprise them when they come home? Yeah.
Oh,
those are always neat, aren't they?
Every time. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think they're a little bit unfair to the kid because they're so overcome with emotion. You know, like, you kind of feel bad for them, but at the same time, they're really cool.
I'm with you. It's a mixed bag a little bit, but I do lean on that part that it just feels good for everybody. An unlucky rescue dog in North Carolina named Ronald went through 14 failed adoptions before finally finding his forever home.
What was he doing? Oh, my goodness.
A big shout out to them. And I use that as a perfect segue into another good story of the day. We've enjoyed the last couple of weeks having the Pet of the Week.
Yeah, that's really cool. Having that back.
So good to have that back. A big shout out not only to the Southfield County Humane Society and the great work that they do. And we encourage you to reach out to them and see what they could use. But to call all these businesses that have helped us do that segment.
Yeah, anybody sponsoring there, that's very much appreciated.
Yeah, and please keep it up. Please keep sponsoring. Talk to our sales team. Call 424-1300. Pam will put you in touch with Ashley, Steph, and really, you know, the best sales team in the business. And be a part of that. It's such a fun segment and such a great way to help out a local nonprofit like our friends at the Humane Society.
Yeah, get on over there and check out the pets that they have and think about adoption.
And, of course, our great friends at the United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties. I know you guys have your annual meeting coming up, Power of the Purse, the Winter Fever Cabin Challenge going on.
Got all kinds of great things going on. I encourage you to zip on over to our website at uswac.org. You can see all of the fun happening. You can download your Cabin Fever Challenge bingo card there. That takes place for the month of February. And we do have some great prizes, but it also just really encourages, spending time with people, some togetherness, being active in the winter. You know, there's a lot of different facets to it, but it's really about, trying things and building relationships and what can we, what can we experience that maybe we've never done before? And so I really encourage people to check that out. There'll be a lot of social media posts about it as well, kind of reminding you. And you know what? If you don't start right on February 1st, you can catch up.
Yeah.
So don't feel like you can't still participate. It's a great opportunity. And then annual meeting, yes, is on February 8th, 5 p.m. at Prevail Bank in the lower level meeting room. Public is encouraged to attend. Our items of business for that meeting are inducting new officers and directors and honoring outgoing directors.
And that is open to the public, you said. That is that's so good to know. And you can find out more, as Terry told you, going to uswswac.org, and encourage you, of course, to follow them on social media. It's a great follow, Facebook follow especially. Keep up the great stuff, and we appreciate our friends at the United Way of Southwood and Adams Counties. Just one more time, a big shout out to Mystique and our friends at WRCT, Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater. Tonight, starting at 7, and tomorrow at 7, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? The Edgy Directors Showcase. Encourage you to check this out. Get your tickets at wrctheater.org or tonight at 7 right there at the opening box office right there.
Looking forward to a great show.
It's going to be a good one. Thanks so much for a great week, everybody. We'll have more good stuff for you next week. Terry, have yourself a good weekend.
You too.
And stick around, everyone. We've got Morning Magazine coming up here at WFHR.